Welcome to JFK Spotlight on Health. This is where we highlight the groundbreaking work being done at JFK University Medical Center in Edison, part of the Hackensack Meridian Health Network. I'm Joel Katz, and thanks for joining us this week. Also joining us, Dr. Gurpreet Full, a pediatric pulmonologist at JFK University Medical Center in Edison. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Yeah, great to have you here. We're going to be talking about asthma for the most part. So let's start. For those who've never had to deal with it, can you explain exactly how it works and what it is? And is it something that you can, you know, I got a million questions about it. You know, can you just get it halfway through your life, or is it something you're born with?
Yeah, happy to expand upon that. Yeah, so the way I would look at asthma is more like a sensitivity. So when we look at things like asthma or lower airway sensitivity or allergies, which is more kind of neck up or upper airway sensitivity, it's more of a kind of like pro-inflammatory response one has. So when it comes to asthma, there's a strong genetic predisposition. So typically, if a mother or father has any of these kinds of sensitivities, the likelihood that a child is going to kind of acquire that is pretty high. But when you look at kids, especially when they're younger, really under the age of five, what you find is viruses, and especially kids that are going to daycare or kids that are going to preschool or kindergarten, those kinds of age ranges are particularly predisposed to kind of picking up viruses, especially when they go to schools. But viruses, for the most part, are kind of what triggers one's airway sensitivity, and it's kind of like an over-inflammatory kind of response.
Okay.
So I'll kind of look at it more as a range of severity. But those that have lower airway sensitivity or asthma, when they get sick, they have a heightened inflammatory response, so they end up having more mucus production, more airway inflammation, and ultimately there's muscles that literally wrap around the airways from the bronchi to the bronchioles, and these tend to constrict. And when they constrict, that's classic wheezing that one would have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what becomes particularly dangerous, especially when kids pick up viruses and then they have a hard time, at least in terms of kind of labored respirations or work of breathing. That being said, as I mentioned before, viruses under the age of five are really the most common triggers. But as one gets older, you find that there's various other triggers that can kind of be at play in regards to this airway sensitivity. So whether that's kind of allergy exposures, especially now, things like pollen or grasses or trees or dust, you name it, any kind of allergy exposures, that can definitely kind of impact that airway inflammatory kind of response that one has that drives that those labored respirations, that work of breathing, those cough symptoms. For other people, it might be different triggers. So whether it's things like exercise, where exercise, breathing in kind of large volumes of air through your mouth, that cold can kind of trigger that airway kind of responsiveness and airway reactivity.
But nothing allergy related in that case.
So what I do find, and it's quite interesting, sometimes you have, kids that, when they play inside, they're really not having as much symptoms, or even adults, but when they go do activities outside, that's when you tend to have more of this kind of airway kind of responsiveness, more not only to exercise, but also kind of like outdoor allergens.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you find different settings, different kind of weather conditions, whether it's very hot or very cold, different types of kind of even activity, whether it's kind of just more, static activity, like weightlifting versus kind of like running or kind of more strenuous activity. Those can definitely kind of trigger more for airway type of reactivity process. So this is where it becomes important to kind of at least kind of have an understanding as to what or what kind of conditions or time frames are kind of triggering kind of this really one's symptoms.
So are you saying even if they're doing the same activity, let's say I'm playing basketball or a child is playing basketball inside, and they're playing basketball outside, same activity, same, it's just as strenuous, same thing, but they're going to have more of an issue outside, which I think we all understand that's usually the case.
Yeah, absolutely, potentially. So definitely, depending on, and this is where it becomes important to kind of, when we kind of see things like this, at least kind of get the pediatrician involved in terms of at least coming to see us or coming to see an allergist to try to identify really what the triggers might be. So, I sometimes find that, when we're playing indoors, let's say in a on a basketball court indoors, whether it's more dust related in the gym, let's say, sometimes kids end up having more issue than, let's say, when they're doing track and field or they're playing on AstroTurf versus grass. And so definitely allergies can play a big role in one's kind of respiratory symptoms. And even kind of the same level of activity can differ from various different locations when it comes to this.
So someone who has asthma, they might have a reaction more to, as you said, dust than they do to outdoor, like cut grass or something like that outside.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And okay.
This is where
I thought it was just the outdoor was the worst, but it depends on the person.
Exactly, right. So that's why everyone is a little bit unique in terms of kind of what potentially kind of triggers their asthma. But this is where a lot of the times, when we find that actually, you know, when you kind of get a full story, you know, the worst indoors or worse outdoors, whatever it might be, having them have allergy testing definitely helps from that end.
Mm-hmm.
So whether we kind of look into things like skin prick testing or blood allergy testing, really to identify kind of what their allergy profile looks like. So at least from that end, we can kind of help better manage. And our goal is always, you know, when it comes to kind of asthma management or allergy management, really the least amount of medications necessary to kind of keep an individual kind of asymptomatic.
Sure.
Or without having symptoms.
So when someone has asthma, it isn't, I think at one point my understanding was that it's from heavy breathing, but you can breathe heavy as long as you're not in a place where there are allergens that affect you personally.
Yeah, yeah. So definitely, I mean, it's definitely something that kind of tacks the respiratory system. So that's going to be, you know, there's going to be different kind of, you know, triggers per
mm-hmm.
se. But
for each person, right?
For each person. But if one does find that actually they are having some degree of limitation compared to, you know, previous years, or mm-hmm. they're finding that whatever they used to do is getting more and more difficult, then one does have to consider, you know, is there something else at play? And that something else at play could be, it could be things like deconditioning, where an individual isn't as, active as they could be, so they can kind of work towards that goal of kind of becoming more active. But a lot of times we also worry about, is there something from like an airway reactivity process or from an allergy-related process that's kind of stemming in regards to that airway inflammation and those airway constriction that's kind of playing a role.
Is there a rating, and I use the term rating because I wanted to ask you, are there different levels of asthma, but... And if there are, how are those levels marked? Is there a rating like asthma 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So we try to qualify one's, it's kind of like a severity scale in terms of kind of how severe one might be. So you might have one individual where you find that, when they're sick, that's only when they end up having symptoms. Or when they're exercising, that might be only when they're having symptoms. And mm-hmm. that might feel something like chest pressure or chest tightness or cough that's more pronounced than, let's say, other individuals. And this is where, in terms of the rating kind of scale that you kind of mentioned, we have a rating like, let's say, intermittent asthma, where symptoms only are kind of seen intermittently when one's active, when one's come down with an illness. And that's where the use of albuterol could be potentially helpful. This is a medication that helps relax the airways. And it's very much temporary, but helps kind of relax the muscles that wrap around the airways that cause that degree of constriction. And then when we find individuals that end up having symptoms that aren't quite managed as well on just as needed kind of albuterol, that's when we kind of start getting into this persistent range where you can have whether it's mild or moderate or severe persistent asthma. And these are the individuals that then we start using daily medications for. And these medications are typically things like inhaled corticosteroids.
Mm-hmm.
And so what that does is, and I typically explain it, I mean, what that does is it basically kind of dampens baseline level of inflammation in the airways. So it's like a topical application of inhaled corticosteroid that dampens airway inflammation in the lungs so that when one does, let's say, get exposed to a potential trigger, be it allergens, be it a virus, be it exercise, yes, that level of inflammation is going to rise, but it's at a much lower starting point. So the severity of one picks up, or the severity of what one has in terms of symptoms is going to be less. The duration of illness one might have is going to be shorter.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is where the whole kind of management schema comes into play. But really kind of having that rating from intermittent to mild to moderate to severe asthma, that's kind of something that we would end up kind of qualifying for that individual.
Yeah, if you have a young child, I know that we used albuterol with a nebulizer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that it was identified as asthma, though. So I would imagine it's used for... and I'm talking about albuterol used for several different ailments.
Yeah. So a lot of the times, you know, if there is, let's say, like a genetic predisposition that fits, like I was mentioning before, if there is, a family member that might have airway reactivity or asthma or upper airway sensitivity or allergies, mm-hmm. or even things like eczema, which is sensitivity on the skin, it tends to travel, it tends to kind of be inherited kind of part and parcel, but they go one hand in hand. So whether it's upper airway sensitivity or lower airway sensitivity or eczema, it tends to kind of go all together. But a lot of times in these kind of individuals that might fit this kind of categorization, we do trial things like albuterol and assess, is there some degree of response? Sometimes we might find there's no response, but sometimes we actually use albuterol more to also assist with just kind of mobilizing mucus that might be in the airways. Mm-hmm. So one can kind of cough that out. So this way it's not affecting their breathing, just because they can now mobilize it and be able to kind of cough that out of their airways.
Talking with Dr. Gurpreet Full, pediatric pulmonologist at JFK University Medical Center in Edison. Let's talk about when a parent has a young child and they come to see you for the first time. And maybe they don't, I'm sure this has happened plenty of times, but they don't know that their child has asthma and you need to share that information with them. And I think like me, or maybe I'm a unicorn, but I doubt it. Like I really, when I was a parent, I still am, but I mean, when I was initially a parent, I really didn't know exactly what asthma was. So to present that to a parent, your child has blank, can be very scary. Yeah. So how do you handle a situation like that?
Yeah. So, I mean, it definitely is. I mean, because I think there's definitely a kind of misunderstanding of kind of what asthma was or, you know, now is. And, you know, back in the day, unfortunately, it was kind of labeled as some sort of chronic illness where, you know, if a child had asthma, you know, it meant that they're not active. They're sitting in the corner during gym. They're not really kind of partaking in it.
I remember that in school. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so it definitely has that kind of, you know, that stigma, and that's one of those things that we're trying to kind of reinforce to the family members and the parents that's really no longer the case. I mean, we have individuals with asthma that, whether they're going to the Army, the Navy, even as pilots, you know, they literally anything and everything that the child wants to do, you know, they should be able to do. There's no kind of limitation. But the way I basically broached that topic is more to kind of describe asthma as an airway sensitivity, and just kind of reinforcing to the family members that yes, you know, the body to some extent has its own protective measures, but when a child's kind of airway reactivity or sensitivity is revved up, that's when we start getting into trouble. And so, ultimately, this isn't something that we want our kids that we're seeing to be on like medications all year round or anything from that end, but truly trying to see what we could do to kind of limit the amount of medications necessary to kind of keep them well. And this is where we kind of look at more symptom-driven kind of management. So when are these individuals having limitations? You know, is it during activity? Is it during illness? You know, are there illnesses resulting in emergency department visits or hospitalizations or ICU admissions or even just need for steroids by the pediatrician? You know, if this mm-hmm. is something that's happening over and over again, the thought would be we're really not as well managed as we need to be. And from a quality of life standpoint, we're really kind of doing a disservice to the child by kind of managing as such. And so getting them on a correct kind of medication regimen definitely allows this child to do far better, at least from a quality of life, being able to participate in activities, not having to kind of stop early, really kind of giving the family members and the child the childhood that they deserve, but also limiting some of these more kind of dangerous issues that can arise, like emergency department visits, need for antibiotics for pneumonias or hospitalizations or even ICU admissions, especially in this kind of day and age with you know, pre and kind of post-COVID.
We just lost you there for a second, but are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
good. So when you say occurring over and over again, how often would it be a concern? Like if someone has some sort of allergy I don't want to say attack, but just has some sort of allergy issue maybe once every few months. Is that something we need to make sure we get taken care of? Or are we looking at it, if it's happening weekly, obviously you would want to, you know, come and see you.
Right. So we often try to see to some extent how much is it affecting their daily life, their daily activities. If it's happening occasionally, this is where, you know, it might not be a bad idea to try to figure out kind of what these individuals' triggers are. Are they in the setting of viruses where when they get sick, actually they stay sicker longer, or they get sick and the severity of their cough is limiting time being able to kind of go to school, or parents having to take time off from work to take them to doctor's appointments? And if that's the case, that's where, you know, we might have to have a plan, really maybe when the child's only sick, and we can kind of limit what they're doing when they're well. But if if a child's having issues, let's say going for walks or going up the stairs at home, mm-hmm. or even kind of just really things that are affecting their daily living, this becomes more of a quality of life issue. So this is where we kind of grade it. You know, how many times a week are we having symptoms? How many times a night in a month are we having symptoms? How many kind of pediatrician visits or urgent care visits have we had in a year, or need for oral steroids or admissions, those kinds of things? And we kind of take all that information, to some extent kind of being like a detective, but taking all this kind of information and then figuring out a plan that can best serve the family with the least amount of medications necessary and the least degree of side effects.
Yeah. There are some things that most people may not think of that could be a trigger. You think of pets could be a trigger, you know, allergic to pets, allergic to, outdoor, you know, like I said, cut grass and things like that. But even things in the house that you wouldn't think of because of dust, because of dust mites. And sometimes it's recommended that carpeting be eliminated. Would that be the most extreme case? Carpeting, curtains, drapes, pillows, things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So this is where when one kind of basically kind of sees an allergist or is able to kind of have blood work or at least kind of recognizes their own symptoms of kind of itchy eyes, watery eyes, sneezing, those kinds of issues, then it becomes kind of looking into what the potential triggers are. But like you mentioned, so things like dust, which is like a natural process of breakdown of larger particles, but dust is technically everywhere. And so when you look at kind of potentially where things like dust might be, whether it's in things like carpeting or whether it's things like draperies or area rugs. And what I tend to find is also kind of going into the winter season, and these are the conversations I have with some of the families that come and see us, a lot of families tend to use things like humidifiers. Mm-hmm. And when you look at things like humidifiers, you know, especially if their child has things like dust allergies, it's actually making things worse. The higher the humidity that one has in the house, the more it allows for dust mites to thrive. And especially if you're allergic to things like dust mites or dust, these right. are things that can kind of play a role in airway reactivity, whether upper or lower airway, and kind of worsen one's symptoms. So definitely making sure that we kind of avoid things that can make things worse, like I was mentioning, like humidifiers, not only from that end, but also from the standpoint that, you know, when you if you're not really kind of cleaning these devices, these humidifiers then start to grow mold. And next thing you know, you're basically nebulizing mold now into the air, and that can definitely take a big toll on one's respiratory system. But pets itself, right. So having an awareness is a pet itself kind of triggering one's respiratory, whether it's upper or lower airway symptoms. And this is where kind of once we identify, yes, it might be a dog or a cat, mm-hmm. or whatever it might be, then it becomes, okay, how can we potentially, we rarely say let's get rid of the pet. You know, obviously this is part of the, part of the family, part mm-hmm. of the house. But then it becomes, okay, can we limit exposures in a sense of let's not have the animal kind of sleep in the same bed or kind of limit where the animal might go. But if one is really symptomatic and it's related to the pet, the thought might be maybe we can kind of go see an allergist and we can look into things like desensitization or even immunotherapies to have one to some extent outgrow what they're potentially allergic to. And yeah. That's where these allergy shots come into play.
Yeah, I'm trying to. So as we mentioned very early on in this conversation, it varies on person to person, child to child. So to say that it's you have to make sure all the dust is removed, so to speak, may not be the case for one child, and it may not be the case with pets either. How does do you know how does it work with hypoallergenic pets? How do you create one of those? I know it works because people get them and they have pet allergies, but when they get a hypoallergenic pet, they don't seem to have an issue.
Yeah, so I always kind of mention that to some extent it's kind of it's kind of like a misnomer. It's not there's nothing per se that's completely. It's more like a scale. So on a severity rating, maybe this animal has less kind of shag or is less long hair or might be short haired, whatever it might be, mm-hmm. can trigger your kind of respiratory or allergy symptoms less. That being said, the same animals, the same one that's going outside in the grass, going outside, rolling around in ragweed, whatever it mm-hmm. might be. So to some extent, they're still kind of bringing that into the house. So even though the animal itself might be hypoallergenic in the sense that you don't react that strongly to the particular animal, the fact that they're still going outside and, brushing up against things that then can mm-hmm. trigger one's respiratory symptoms, it's still at play. So I always kind of proceed with caution and say, yes, I'm glad we have some hypoallergenic animal, but we still have to be cautious as to kind of what we're letting this animal do, as that can definitely kind of play a role in respiratory symptoms. But like you were mentioning, so I guess the common denominator under the age of five for respiratory-related exacerbations or respiratory symptoms is going to be viruses. So I guess that would be the take-home. Under five, it would be viruses. But as one gets a little bit older, you find that different things become at play, whether it's viruses, whether it's allergies from environmental, indoor, pet allergies, whether it's things like exercise, whether it's even things like smoking exposures. So that's typically a big one, which I find. And a lot of times people feel like, we've made the switch from smoking to vaping. To some extent, that might be better. But I also caution families that, they're one in the same, whether it's smoking, whether cigarettes, whether it's vaping or anything like that. If you kind of look at respiratory symptoms as like a sensitivity or allergies as a sensitivity, if one's a little bit more sensitive, these kinds of chemicals in the vape or particulate matter in the incinerated smoke, this is going to get into the airways and definitely cause a lot of airway reactivity.
Okay. So it, yeah. Well, obviously, smoking, everybody knows it's not good, period. But to have it around somebody who has allergies, it could exacerbate it that much more. You don't want to smoke around children, right? Do we need to say that?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is where I was going to kind of expand upon that. So the kind of what you're describing is that secondhand smoke, where one smokes around the child. But there's more and more studies looking into what they call third-hand smoking. And this is the type of third hand smoking, and this is particularly bad. This is the kind of smoke where, for yourself or for me, like when I get in an elevator, I can tell this person smoked, this person vaped,
sure,
this person had a barbecue or did fireworks. Basically, it's this particulate matter that kind of lingers in the hair, on the skin, and the clothing. And it's that when inhaled, it basically goes through the upper airways en route to the lungs, where it causes inflammation, irritation, mucus production in the upper airways, and en route to the airways themselves, again, cause more inflammation, reactivity, airway constriction. So I often counsel, a lot of family members, I don't smoke near my child. Great. But they come in the house and you can smell it on them, or you can, they smoke in the car or vape in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is where, a lot of times we recommend kind of having like a dedicated, obviously, stopping smoking is the best or stopping vaping is the best, but having a dedicated smoking hat or vaping hat and a dedicated smoking or vaping jacket, which when they finish smoking or vaping, they leave outside the house. So take the hat off, take the jacket off. Come in the house, wash your hands, throw water on your face, and this way it's not in your hair. It's on minimal kind of skin. It's not in your clothing. At least this way, when you're picking up your child or interacting with other individuals, it's not something that they can smell on you.
Right. So even if you're smoking in a jacket, yeah, I never even thought of that. So you're wearing a certain jacket. Even if you didn't come in the house, but you left the jacket in the house, that would cause harm as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we find, and it's kind of hard to quantify, but everything kind of adds up to the general equation of airway reactivity. Viruses might be 40-50%. Allergens might be another 30%. Smoking or third-hand smoke might be another 10-15%. A lot of candle use or even things like Glade plugins or chemicals might be another 4-5% use. Right. So it all, if you kind of look at it as airway reactivity, everything kind of adds to that general equation of increased kind of airway reactivity or airway inflammation.
Yeah, that was going to be my last question because we have about a minute left and it was about cleaning.
Okay.
You think, okay, we need to clean to keep everything clean, but then even the cleaners can cause, the cleaners meaning the chemicals, could cause an issue.
Right. So this is where, if you kind of just look at it as a sensitivity, so even general things like household cleaners or bleach, I've had individuals where they've kind of dyed their hair and you find 2 days later they're in the ICU. And you look into the, when you kind of start going through the history, actually, they've been using things like hydrogen peroxide or bleaching products.
Mm-hmm.
And it's these chemical smells that, when inhaled, can trigger that increased kind of airway reactivity, smooth muscle constriction, mucus production that leads one to end up having respiratory symptoms. So what I would recommend is, being very cautious with these kind of very kind of stringent or strong chemicals, But even then, trying to go for the more natural route. So one that, you know, so an individual that does have airway reactivity or allergies might not be a bad idea looking for things like apple cider vinegar or those kinds of products that we mm-hmm. can kind of then dilute to use as cleaners versus these strong chemicals that one's picking up from the grocery store.
Yeah, we've all been asked at one time or another, have you changed laundry detergent when you have an issue, right? Isn't that a question that you would, I've been asked that by doctors, you know, when there's some sort of reaction. Have you changed your laundry detergent recently? Because sometimes going from one to another can cause an issue.
Absolutely, absolutely. So if you look at it kind of that way, all these kind of chemicals can trigger airway reactivity. So, changing from laundry detergents. I mean, typically that can play a role. And we try to, as we go through the history, kind of recommend maybe switching to something that really doesn't have a smell to it. So there's a lot of different laundry detergents and even soaps that really don't have smells, and that's kind of what we'd want to use. But same kind of thing, you know, whether it's chlorine in pools,
you just have to think about everything. You just have to think about everything that you could possibly inhale.
Right, right. Yeah. Kind of being mindful, and this is where kind of when we have families that come and see us, this is kind of the discussions we have, and then they start getting a more of an awareness and an understanding in terms of how we can kind of help manage this better.
Yeah, well, I think we've learned a lot today, Dr. Gurpreet Phul, pediatric pulmonologist at JFK University Medical Center in Edison. Thank you for being on the program.
Oh, great, great. Thank you for having me.
For more information, go to jfkmc.org. For a podcast of this show, you can go to foxsportsradionewjersey.com. JFK Spotlight on Health is brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health. Keep getting better. I'm Joel Katz, and we'll talk again next week.